Well, hello.
Oh, hey.
And welcome.
Yeah.
Hey, welcome. This is another special episode of Cinema Shock. It's the podcast celebrating your favorite cult genre movies.
I forgot it.
Yeah.
Gary has completely forgotten how to podcast. It's going to be great for people who are just discovering us because they looked up a review of this movie.
Well, it's because we've been working on some side project in Cinema Shock Plus, and the regular episodes have been a little funky. We've been doing these new releases that are voted on by the listeners of Cinema Shock Plus, or by our members at Cinema Shock Plus, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is part of an ongoing, we've been doing about once a month. Every month we review a new release. Now, if you're not familiar with Cinema Shock, what we normally do is like these long form series where it's usually centered around like a filmmaker. Like we did, like David Lynch was the last big one we did, where we went through like every David Lynch movie by movie. And then we're not really reviewing the movies so much as we are telling the stories behind the movies, how the movies got made, the filmmaker's inspiration for them, and then analyzing, in our thoughts and things like that, really doing a deep dive movie by movie and tracking the career of a filmmaker. So that's kind of what we normally do if you're just discovering us through this review. But this is kind of part of a series that we started back in December where, in addition to our regular series, we're going to be talking about some new releases. Once a month, we pick a new release. We actually pick several new releases that are coming out that month and then let members of, like Gary said, Cinema Shock Plus, which is our members-only site that you can subscribe to, those members get to pick out which movies we're going to talk about. Like, so they get to vote on which new release we're talking about each and every month. So this is actually this one. So today, I'm sure you clicked on the title of this. So you know what we're talking about. We're talking about Maggie Gyllenhaal's The Bride that was voted on for our March movie. And this is actually the third in a row of our new releases that was directed by a woman, which I think is pretty cool, especially considering March is Women's Month, and today, as we're recording this, is, I believe, International Women's Day.
Well, how about that? Isn't that special? So here we are, exactly what you wanted, some cis white guys talking about women filmmakers.
Yeah, so, but hey, perfect. we can still appreciate it. So yeah, so our pick this month is The Bride. That is with a big exclamation part at the end, and that I think it earned that exclamation point because it is yelling at you quite a bit. And I don't mean that in a bad way. We're going to talk about it, but it's a big, bold movie with a lot to say. So Gary, let's just get into it. Cause these reviews are much less structured than our regular episodes. So we're just going to kind of have a conversation about that. I don't have any script in front of me. Gary doesn't either. I'm literally just looking at the Wikipedia page so that I can remember people's names right now. that's all I've got in front of me. So this is going to be a lot more looser and off the cuff than what we normally do. But Gary, I wanted to ask your thoughts on just going into this movie. Were you looking forward to it? Was this like on your radar? Was this something you were kind of hyped about or what?
I would say that I was looking forward to watching it eventually. I don't know that I was like necessarily hyped about it. I like Maggie Gyllenhaal, so that's no knock on her or anything. It just, with everything in the world that's out there, I felt like I just watched Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein. And then I know this is not that. But come on, they're so close together. I gotta at least mention it. So I saw one Letterboxd review that said they went with their mother and they actually thought that this was a sequel and that Christian Bale was playing Jacob Elordi's.
Their mother thought that, or the person writing the review thought that?
The person writing the review's mother thought that.
Ah, wow, that would be a quick turnaround on a sequel. Less than 6 months.
It was actually Zoe Rose Bryant.
To
the review, and I said when this ended, my mom asked me how it fit into the other one, and I was like, "What are you talking about?" And it was then that she revealed she'd watched the entire movie, assuming it was a sequel to Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, and Christian Bale played an older Jacob Elordi.
Wow, that would be so confusing. Well, this was very much like I was hyped for this. Like I've been seeing these trailers for months. I think the marketing team has knocked it out of the park. I think every trailer has been incredible. I think all of the posters have been incredible. I think the marketing team on this has really been doing a phenomenal job, which is why it's really unfortunate that as we're recording this on Sunday night, the box office numbers have been coming in and they are dire. Gary. It looks like it's going to make probably maybe $7.5 million opening weekend. This is like a $90 million budget. So this is like a, if that's the case, and if it doesn't have legs, and I don't know that it will, this is going to be a major financial flop for Warner Brothers, which is unfortunate because I quite enjoyed this movie. What did you think of it?
I thought it was great. I had a good time. And so that's where I meant to get to was, you know, even though I wasn't like necessarily like gung ho about it, like it wasn't one that was, you know, I hate to be this way. It wasn't like Avengers Doomsday or something where I was just like, I got to see this and the biggest screen possible and that kind of thing. Although I'm glad I did because you should, because it looks awesome.
Did you see it on the IMAX?
I did not see it on IMAX. No,
I saw it on the IMAX because it was filmed for IMAX. Like there were scenes that where they use the IMAX ratio, and it opens up much in the way that like Sinners did. It's not quite as like extensively used as Sinners, but it's used a good bit. Where they, I don't know that they were shooting on IMAX cameras. I'm not really sure, but it was definitely like. There are scenes that were framed for the IMAX screen, so it was pretty cool to watch. But like when we were there, we went opening night, Thursday night, to the IMAX, and there were maybe 15 people in the theater. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, where is everybody? Why is everyone else not as hyped for this movie as I am? Because I think the marketing, I think they crushed it. And I think that it should be exciting people, but maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's just too weird for people.
Yeah, I've seen some stuff I hate that people don't seem to grasp that it's not, you know, a traditional monster movie or something. Like if you're walking into the theater expecting a dusty gothic castle or something and, you know, a big lumpy monster bumping into walls and stuff, you can just go ahead and count that out. Like this is blowing all of that up. This is in like 1930s Chicago and New York and like and this is way more natural born killers than, you know, Sid and Nancy and all that than the classic, like universal monster version of this. But I say all that because I've seen some people that seem to have a problem with that. And I've also seen reviews that are really hating on, they think, you know, it's these people thinking that they're attacking men. And so,
fuck those people.
I've seen a bunch of that on like some of the social media stuff. And I'm like, come on. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, that's unfortunate because I get some people's complaints about this. We're not going to get into spoilers quite yet on here, but I do, you know, the movie is, it's heavy-handed in its messaging. It is not subtle. It's not trying to be subtle. Like I said at the beginning, it's got a big exclamation point at the end of it. And this movie is not, it's not whispering to you by any means. It is yelling at you or is projecting. It is a big, bold, and it's a little bit messy of a movie. It is a little bit unfocused at times, but it is super ambitious and fun and such a unique take on something that's been done a million times before. Like how many Frankenstein or riffs on Frankenstein movies are there? I mean, you were just talking about how Del Toro did his last year, and that's a fantastic movie and a very, very different take on the material than this. And I think one great thing about Frankenstein as a character or as a concept, I guess you could say, the Frankenstein monster, is that there are so many ways that you can kind of mold it to tell the story that you're wanting to tell. I think Dracula or vampires in general are very good at that as well. That's one great thing about the horror genre in general is how easy it is to mold these archetypical concepts into the story that you want to tell with it, which in this case is a very feminist story. I mean, it's all told from the bride's point of view, and it's all about how this is a woman who's been kind of used by men. But it is also kind of a love story, but it's about a woman who, despite the way that she's kind of told that she's in love with this guy, even though that's really a fallacy. She's been created and just like for him because she was murdered, which is, again, not a spoiler because it's in the like literally the first scene of the movie. But it's not like a man hating movie. It hates shitty men, which as we all should.
Well, because I guess we'll save it for spoiler territory on some of where the plot goes, even with Frank himself. But it, yeah, and you know, it is. Admittedly, as I guess as a dude, you know, I walked out of the movie and one of the first things I had thought about to my wife was, wow, I was really like, it was a little heavy handed, you know, and kind of messy. Some of the same stuff you're saying. And then the more that I think about it, the more I'm like you said, it has that big exclamation point at the very end of mm-hmm. The Bride. And, you know, I'd read that Maggie Gyllenhaal, like part of the first part of inspiration for this movie was that she had seen like a tattoo on someone of like the hair of the Bride mm-hmm. of Frankenstein. Yeah. And it made her, I don't know if she like it made her watch it or whatever it was. She was just like, you know, it's so weird that this movie is called The Bride of Frankenstein and she's barely in it and just hisses. Like she doesn't even get to say anything. And so that was kind of the spark that started the whole thing. And so then you imagine that this is about being loud and audacious and mm-hmm. just getting it all out. And it is messy. She's messy in the movie. Like there's her brain is not like, I think another place she drew some inspiration was she had a friend with Tourette's. So like, I think I had seen an interview. She mentioned that with The Bride. Yeah. So there's these moments of The Bride, like just getting words out. And, you know, so it almost starts to feel like maybe that's the point, you know? And so like, even in the parts that feel heavy handed, it's like, well, this is a woman that's just been released to just be anything and say mm-hmm. anything and nothing's going to stop her that she is. And so I don't know. It just, the more I think about it in that way, the more I feel like, you know what, maybe that's okay. That's what it should be.
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple moments where, like, there's a moment later in the movie where the bride literally yells, "Me too," and that's like
that got me.
I rolled my eyes a little bit about that, only because not because I disagree with the sentiment, but because it's like you didn't have to. Like, we get the point without you having to say that out loud. You know,
that was the first example I gave to the wife. Was I was like, that just felt really on the nose. Yeah. But you know. That was the most questionable one for me.
That was really, yeah, exactly. But for the majority of it, I mean, even if we don't talk about like the thematic stuff, which I think you should, because I think it's a big part of the movie, but just from a conceptual standpoint, like the idea of this Frankenstein movie. So basically you've got Frankenstein's monster living in 1930s Chicago, but he's been alive for 100 and some odd years at this point. So he is the Frankenstein's monster that was created like in the original Frankenstein of the 1800s. But this version of 1930 Chicago that the first part of the story takes place in is this very hyper stylized version where there are like music clubs that look like they're out of the 1980s punk scene, and characters who like the way they dress is not period accurate. Like it's very heightened and stylized and not at all within the world that we live in. There's nothing about this that's supposed to be realistic. It's all supposed to be big and overblown and stylized, like from the science and the Annette Bening plays this kind of mad scientist character that brings the bride to life. Her like laboratory and everything about it is very big and cinematic and unrealistic in a way that I am always attracted to in a movie, because I like these worlds that are kind of conjured and created that don't look like the real world. I think that's fun. I love the clashing of the 30s Chicago with the 80s punk rock and you know, it's got musical numbers and it's got like stuff that I could see why people would push back against it, because it is a lot, but all of that stuff is sort of stuff that makes me love it, because I love, you said the word audacious earlier. The first thing I thought 5 minutes into the movie, that's the word that popped into my head when Mary Shelley as a character is on screen monologuing to the audience and then literally says, "Here comes the motherfucking bride." I almost got up and cheered, because that's the kind of like bold, like out there thinking that I love to see a filmmaker do. And I'm like, and audacious was the exact word that came to my mind. And I think that's the best way to describe this movie. And I mean it as a compliment.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's perfect in that way. It's one of those that, I'm glad that I went to see it. And the more that I think about it, the more I like it. So it makes me sad to hear that it's not doing well as of this recording. Because I think the movie is really, really good. And
I think it's the kind of movie that a lot of people are going to discover later on and fall madly in love with it. Like the people who, it's not a movie for everyone, because it is, you know, it's weird. It's an oddball, odd duck of a movie, But I think the people who do like find something to love about it are going to become obsessed with it. And I would put myself in that. Like I came home and pre-ordered the 4K Blu-ray the day that I saw the movie. Because I want to have this movie and I want to rewatch it over and over again.
I want to give some props to Christian Bale too. I thought he was really, really good. I don't know what I expected out of him on how he would play this character, but he strips away like a lot of the horror elements of the monster, which you think I would hate, but because his character is more of a neglected, like lonely man child kind of person, and I think that's probably what drew it to him. And I've seen interviews where you know his style is completely based off Sid Vicious in the My Way video, like the white coat and the big feet. I saw him in an interview described like when Sid like walks down the stairs to come and sing the song or whatever, and like that's the image that was in there. Also, another inspiration being Manic Street Preachers, Richie Manic, the lead singer. That guy was, you know, he was wild, very punk. And these are all guys. I guess that's like one of Christian Bale's like big bands he loves. But these were all inspirations for the character of Frank, and you can see that. And there's a cool video that was circulating on social media too, going through all the stuff that's on his coat and stuff.
Oh yeah,
it was like written on it, and you know, the movie doesn't really have time to like let you dwell on that too much, but it's kind of fun. But it definitely has that, like, it becomes a movie that's more, like I said at the top, like Natural Born Killers or, you know, the Bonnie and Clyde kind of stuff. Like
I got a little, maybe it's because we've been doing so much David Lynch, but I got a little Wild at Heart in there.
That would have made sense.
The second half of the movie does kind of become like this road trip of the, you know, traveling across the country. So there's a lot of like, Natural Born Killers, Bonnie and Clyde, Wild at Heart kind of inspiration going on there for sure. You mentioned Christian Bale and how good he is, but I mean, let's talk about fucking Jessie Buckley, man, as the bride. She is like, she blew my mind in this movie. Like, her performance is so free and big and wild and uninhibited. Like, you know, from the things that she does with her, you know, switching between essentially two different characters in her head, to like the scene in the club where she starts dancing and stuff, like just watching her was infectious. Like, she is incredible. And I didn't have a lot of like familiarity with her. I'd seen her in Alex Garland's Men a few years ago, which I thought she was really good in, but here she like kind of blew my mind. And of course she is kind of the favorite for the Oscar next week for her role in Hamnet. So after watching this, I decided I was going to watch Hamnet. I watched Hamnet yesterday, and as soon as I watched it, I was like, well, just go ahead and give her that Oscar now, because this is one of the best performances I've seen in many years. Obviously, what she's doing in The Bride is very different than what she's doing in Hamnet. It's a period piece about Shakespeare. This is obviously much bigger, and I think her performance is dialed up to meet the movie on its own level of energy, if that makes sense. And I think she is just remarkable in this.
Oh, she's a rock star. And she I just feel bad that I said I wanted to give a shout out to Christian Bale. For some reason I was in my head thinking like, we obviously she's great. I don't know, for some reason in my brain I was just like, oh well, yeah, we like her. But no, she's amazing, and she gets to do a couple of different roles in this, so I don't know, like her whole performance is brilliant. And I don't want to spoil anything, but there's like a putting on the Ritz moment too.
Oh, it's so good. Cause I mean, it's so good because it's obviously a Young Frankenstein reference.
Right.
And it's so fun, and not, I expected there, cause these movies always have like some sort of reference to other versions of the character, you know? So you expect like a Karloff homage or something, which you don't really get that much. Maybe there's a little bit of the Jack Pierce makeup, inspiration in Christian Bale's makeup, and you get a little bit of, in the scenes with Mary Shelley, you get a little bit of like, because they're shot in black and white, but she has this kind of shock of like white on the side of her head that's very reminiscent of The Bride. And also just the fact that Jessie Buckley plays Mary Shelley, and again, not a spoiler, first scene in the movie, but she's sort of narrating this thing, and Jessie Buckley is also playing Mary Shelley. Well, in the original Bride of Frankenstein, Elsa Lanchester, who plays the bride, also played Mary Shelley in the wraparound story to that. So that's an homage to the James Whale original. What I wasn't expecting was an homage to Mel Brooks in the middle of this movie. Right. And it made me very happy as soon as I realized what was happening.
Christian Bale yelling, putting on the Ritz.
So good. Yeah.
The cinematographer is Lawrence Sher. Did we say that? It's the guy who shot Joker, I think, is who it is.
Oh, okay. It's funny because I've seen a lot of people, like, I've seen people compare this to the second Joker movie unfavorably. Like, they were comparing it like, oh, this is just another Joker folie à deux, which I have not seen, so I can't speak to it. But people are saying that as an insult to this movie, like, oh, we already have Joker 2 at home or whatever. And because people famously hated that movie when it came out, again, I can't speak to it because I never saw it. But that kind of hurts my feelings a little bit because I do think this is really good and people are, you know, saying that as an insult. But that's interesting that it's the same cinematographer. I don't think I realized that, but it does look wonderful. I think it looks great.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's like it feels wild. Like it's kind of like madness on screen, and the way those, like, the different types of you know, like you mentioned, the cross between this like 1930s or whatever and like 80s, there's like this like flapper punk thing going on with like a lot of stuff, and it just, the costumes and the way it looks, like it just feels good. Like, I don't know, it just, it's a crazy looking movie, And then it still does allow for like a little bit of violence in there too. It's actually really brutal.
A little bit. There's a lot of violence in here. It's pretty, it's pretty bloody, pretty. It definitely earns its R rating in the gore department. Not like it's like super gory, but it does not hold back at any point in any way whatsoever. One thing I really loved about this movie, that one of my favorite aspects of it, honestly, is that world building. I mean, we've mentioned the Chicago, 30s Chicago meets 80s punk thing, but also there are these like detective characters in it that are played by Penelope Cruz and Peter Sarsgaard. They're both really good in it, but they play these kind of almost quirky like detectives in it, but you know, they never say who they like work for. Like, you assume Chicago, they're like Chicago police detectives, but they also seem to have jurisdiction in other towns.
Right.
As the movie goes on, they kind of like, they travel to New York, they travel to Niagara Falls and Indiana, and they're all over the country, and they seem to always have jurisdiction. And even at one point when they're in like New York, I think it is, there's a police officer who's like, well, who are you? Who am I taking orders from? And she's like, the detectives are in charge now. The detectives? Like, of who? Like, what detectives? Like, is this just like some, is this like the Pinkertons? Like, what? They seem to be this like magical, like just, it's like they have jurisdiction. It's like they're the FBI or something, but they're just the detectives. And I sort of love that. I think a lot of people might not love that, but I think it creates this sort of heightened reality. And also the fact that they're traveling from Indiana to New York to Chicago and all these all over the place, seemingly like overnight, like it just, like there's no travel involved. It's just like all of a sudden we're in New York. And it seems like it's just been a matter of hours. And I sort of love that almost fairy tale aspect of it that lends itself to.
That is really funny. The detectives were the like I loved Peter Sarsgaard and Penelope Cruz in that role, and there was something really, you know, it's interesting, like Peter Sarsgaard is, there's something really likable about him as the detective. There's something really likable about Christian Bale as Frankenstein, but there's, I think that's interesting that like even they are not innocent in the movie either, right? And like some of their motivations and their actions. So it like really, I don't know. I think it should like make people reflect on that a little bit. Like just some of the choices that they make or not. I mean, it gets a little more obvious with like some than others, but like there's just like a real discussion on consent in this movie, I think.
Oh, for sure.
And so, even in the aspect of this woman is being brought back to life without her consent, for one, and then also not to like live her life again or have a second chance at life. She's to be the companion, girlfriend of this guy. Like, she's just there for his companionship. So,
well, that's what a lot of the movie is really about, is like her reclaiming her own agency. You know, that's really what this is. And 'cause a lot of it is people trying to hold her back. and her refusing to be held back and refusing to sit into that role that was created for her by this, you know, mad scientist and by the Frankenstein's monster himself, who kind of like put her in a role that she never asked to be put in, and her saying, no, this is not like, I am not, that's not who I am. I mean, even there's a line that's in the trailer where someone says, they're like, you're the bride of Frankenstein. And she says, no, just the bride. She's not, she doesn't belong to anybody.
Well, yeah. And I also like the repeating line in there too. The, I would prefer not to.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah. It's like, that should be on t-shirts. It's great.
I can't imagine that it's not going to be, but I mean, hopefully this movie gets some more love so that stuff like that does, work. But yeah, I think if you're on the fence on it, you should definitely go see this movie. Do you want to go into spoilers, or
we can go into spoilers? Yeah, for just a couple minutes. But yeah, I mean, if you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want to be spoiled, we're about to get into spoilers. But I would say this sounds like a 2 thumbs up from both of us. Like, this movie is, I think it's phenomenal. Honestly, like that, this is the kind of movie I walked out of and I was like on cloud 9, because it is so refreshing anytime that a movie that is this bold and audacious, even if it is a little messy, even if it is a little like heavy handed and a little bit unfocused at times, just to have that slip through the studio system and somehow get made in this version. And I know that Maggie Gyllenhaal said she had to cut back some of the sexual violence and stuff because the studio was like, well, that's a little much. She still got a pretty like bold movie through the system and into theaters where it's playing like, you know, nationwide. It is a wide release with movie stars in it. And anytime that a movie like that can slip through, it like makes me happy, even if it's not perfect. And this movie's not perfect. It's got some issues, but nothing that negates how I think exciting it is.
Oh yeah. I definitely think people should see it in theaters so that more movies like this can get made, because this is different than most other things you're going to run into out there. And it's great. I also forgot to mention Jake Gyllenhaal's a lot of fun as Ronnie Reed in the thing.
Yeah.
And it reminds me of Gene Kelly a little bit, because I just watched Singing in the Rain not too long ago and didn't realize how much of a dickhead Gene Kelly seems like he was. And so it was perfect.
Well, like in real life?
Yeah, in real life.
That's too bad. I love Singing in the Rain.
Oh yeah, look up some stuff about Gene Kelly sometimes and how he acted, and especially to his co-stars on Singing in the Rain. It's a
Man, that's good. Well, that's like my favorite musical. Is it going to ruin it for me?
I mean, it didn't ruin it for me. He can dance. Okay. He seems like an asshole, but he dances like a motherfucker.
So. He does dance like a motherfucker, as does Christian Bale, Jesse Buckley in this movie. But yeah, let's get into spoilers. So if you have not seen the movie and you don't want any spoilers, we're going to get into those now. We're not going to get too deep into it, but there might be a couple aspects we need to talk about. So this is your final warning, spoilers. What do you want to talk about, Gary?
Everybody dies at the end. Well, I was kind of joking, but I guess they kind of do. But
the bride does, but also gets brought back immediately.
For what it's worth, everybody dies at the beginning, technically.
Also true. So yeah.
Yeah. I don't know necessarily there were like any major spoilers. I just didn't want to have to worry about tiptoe
around stuff. Yeah.
I was going to say the detectives were part of I loved them, and they were part of the problem I had with like some of the heavy handedness. Like if I was being critical about something there, I felt like they had really good chemistry together and I liked them, but I feel like they were trying to explain too much to you the point they were trying to get across with them. They bothered me a little bit. Besides the Me Too thing, it was the detectives like that Peter Sarsgaard had to like say like, I'm like you're his girl Friday. And they're like, this is what I'm doing. I'm seducing the cops and blah, blah, blah. And if they had played that a little bit looser, that they were joking about it, like that one wouldn't have been so bad. But it felt like every scene they were in, they had to establish to you what the dynamic was, that she's really the smart cop and he's the one who's, you know, getting by on her intelligence, you know? And it's like, that's fine, but I feel like I feel like I got that point early on and you felt like you had to keep reminding people of that.
Yeah, it also hinted at like a backstory between them that like was intriguing that they never quite like explored, which is fine. I mean, just the intrigue is enough, but I did want a little bit more of that. but there's a lot of that in the movie, because there's a lot of like backstory with the bride herself that you don't really get until Peter Sarsgaard kind of lays some of it out. But all of that is sort of start part of the world building, you know, like you don't know the full history with the mobster, the guy who's taking people's tongues and all that stuff. But you get enough of it to understand where she's coming from. Same thing with Annette Bening's character. There's a whole movie about her and her weird fucking maid that lives with her that is sort of off screen, a whole story off screen somewhere, you know, that I didn't need it to be like broadened anymore. But some people will be, I think, frustrated by that. For me, it's all part of the world building. I get what you're saying with Peter Sarsgaard and Penelope Cruz. That was just a little more like, you made your point. We don't have to keep establishing it.
Well, yeah, and I think especially once it gets to the ending where, or you know, the part where they're in the car and she's talking about like, I want my name on this one if we get there, and he's just like, well, that's not up to me. By the time he ends up telling the story also about Ida or the bride, I think it brings it home. Like, you know what's going on there, and you can see that even though he's not like some awful person, but he's also very passive and like, he's not very helpful either.
No.
And so, and that causes problems as well. And it's just like, you know, like I kind of alluded to it earlier on, but since we're talking about spoilers, like even Frank, you know, is like, he's not like a bad dude. He's just, he doesn't realize that he's leaning on her and gaslighting her. And I mean, he is lying to her, and I guess he realizes he's lying to her, but it seems like to him an innocent lie, I suppose. And,
right.
You know, and it just, you see all these places where like, even in that passive way, like she's not being given autonomy or, you know, to choose what she wants to. And in some of those ways, I think it's really good. Like you did a really good job of like showing that. And so it kind of, it feels bad that it cheapens it in some places that you feel like you've got to like spell it out, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean, like there's a lot of heavy handedness to this. And I think that's one of the things that some of the criticisms that I've seen towards it, that's kind of what they're like aimed at, is how heavy handed it is. But while I understand that, and I don't disagree that it's very heavy handed, like with the Me Too thing we mentioned earlier, there are some other things that it's very much like, we get the point. It's not enough to like ruin the movie for me. In fact, I mean, that stuff is important to the story. Could it have been told in a more like graceful way? Maybe, but this is not a movie that's really concerned with being graceful. It's a movie about being like in your face. It is very much in your face. I mean, and there are things like there's this whole subplot where women are being inspired by this bride killer after her, like her thing with Jake Gyllenhaal's character, where they, you know, she ends up shooting the cop and all that stuff. And she becomes this sort of like a folk hero, and women start painting their faces, which is like a symbol of like, we're tired of this shit of taking your shit. And this is our symbol of rebellion, which I really like. And I think it's really cool. I feel like it could have been played up even more than it was, because it feels like there's enough of it to make me want to see more of it without you guys. And then you guys didn't really like expand upon it quite enough to where you almost could have left it out. Now, had that been like a sting at the end of the movie, where it's like all the movie ends with these people, all of a sudden it's like people being inspired by, like at the end of, what is it, like one of the fucking Superman movies where the kid has like a Superman shirt on or something, you know, and he's like, that kind of thing where we're inspired by this, and that's the end of the movie, is this inspiration is going to take us forward. I almost feel like you could have done that with her like followers or people who are inspired by her. It's like after the end of the movie, all of a sudden there's this movement that goes on in her memory kind of thing, where they're still painting their faces and all that.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the messier parts, where it doesn't feel like you get like the justification about why that's happening necessarily at the time that it does. You know, you haven't seen anything that's like, I don't know, it doesn't hit quite right to be like, oh, now you're causing gangs of women.
Yeah,
you know, like
it just should have been later in the story after there was more to inspire them.
Yeah. I think I'm with you there. And to be clear, even on that stuff about the heavy-headedness, no, I'm with you. That's kind of what I was saying earlier too, was just, you know, the more I thought about that, I was like, well, there is the exclamation mark at the end. Mm-hmm. And it is about just like, what if you could wake up and you could speak? And that was her whole point, is that, you know, the bride never speaks. And like, there were things that Mary Shelley wouldn't have gotten away with saying at the time that she was writing Frankenstein on a dare. So it's like, what if everybody could finally just say every fucking thing that's on their mind? So I'm like, maybe I'm looking that from a lens that I've got, but maybe that's the point. Maybe that's, you know, you're hammering it, like you're just getting it out there. So, you know, maybe I'm judging too harshly on that.
What did you think about this idea of like Mary Shelley? She's narrating the story, but she's also speaking to the character of the bride, sort of like she's like an internal, like, how did you read that? Do you read that as like, is the story of this movie of the bride being told by Mary Shelley? Is she like putting, another thing she's writing, or is that, because she seems to also be sort of possessing the bride, or the bride's got almost a split personality where she's part Ida, although she doesn't know she's Ida, and part Mary Shelley at times. And like, she kind of goes back and forth, but also Mary Shelley is sort of like telling the story and talking about it as if it is a story, because she references her own book that she's written. So it's sort of very meta thing, but also it sort of like blurs the line between fiction and the world of the film, like the quote unquote real world of the film, and literature and all this other, it kind of like melds all these things together in a way where you're not quite sure where the borders between them are.
It's a little strange. I think it's one of those things that like, I just accepted it and didn't think about it too hard, because you're obviously in a world that's real. That Frankenstein is real. That's a thing. So if Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein, then how is she, you know, possessing the character? It seems like she's writing it, but she also does say at the very beginning part about, you know, till the day while I was on Earth or something, and now I'm wherever the fuck I am now.
Yeah.
And it's like, she's in this darkness or something, like she's in this limbo or something, and she's still communicating through it's weird. I think the idea is more to give both of them a voice, like give mm-hmm. the bride a voice and give Mary Shelley a voice to like, what would they say if they could say anything? But I didn't get too caught up in logically.
I didn't either. I was just curious. I kind of like how vague it is. I think a lot of people will be confused by it, and it is a little confusing because, yes, in the world of the film, Frankenstein, or the monster, was created, who he goes by the name Frank anyway, but he was created by Dr. Frankenstein. Almost like this is a sequel to the original book that Mary Shelley wrote, but also Mary Shelley is a character in the movie that possesses the bride at times and has the memories of the bride and the anger of the bride has the anger of Mary Shelley.
And the bride straight up talks to her at some points too. Yeah. You know, like there's moments where she's just like saying something to Mary, like, I can't take any more Mary and stuff like that. Like, she knows that there's something else in her brain.
Yeah. So it's very interesting. And maybe I thought afterwards that maybe the reason I accepted it so easily is because we've been, as we're recording this, we've been doing Twin Peaks: The Return, and there's a lot of fluidity between like, what's real, what isn't, like not expecting full explanations of characters. Can one character can be multiple people at once and like all this stuff. So maybe my David Lynch poisoned brain is just better at accepting stuff like that.
Well, I almost said, like, when you first asked the question, my very first thought was, I was like, I've seen so much weirder shit lately, so I don't think I thought about it.
Like, yeah. This is nothing like the Twin Peaks: The Return or fucking Inland Empire or whatever. Like, this is right, nothing compared like, to
this,
that.
This is how stories are told.
This is just not how things are done.
Oh, props to Zlatko Burek. I meant to mention his name earlier. That guy, what is he doing? Like, he's the guy who plays Lupino, the mob boss in the movie, but he was in Superman. He was the foreign country's leader.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And he's apparently in Wonder Man And so he's just like blow it up as a, he's barely blow it up as like a character actor or something, I guess.
Nice. Good for him. Well, he's, I mean, he doesn't do a whole lot in this, but like where every time he's on screen, he's scary.
Oh yeah. He's impactful for sure.
Yeah. I love this movie, Gary. And I'm really glad to hear you did because, you know, after I saw it, I've been reading other people's reviews, Letterboxd and stuff like that. And people are really split on it. Some people are loving it. Some people are really hating it. Some people are hating it because they feel like it's too heavy handed, just too much. But I feel like it's a statement, and a statement should sometimes be obvious and heavy handed and loud. You don't always have to be subtle.
Well, I mentioned earlier on, the Zoe Rose Bryant review, I was disappointed. Like she gave it like 2.5 stars. And I guess is middling, but it's, some of the people that I follow, the reviews I'm seeing end up being like 2.5 or, mm-hmm. you know, 3. My wife literally gave it 5 stars on Letterboxd. So.
Oh yeah. Bunny adored it. Like when we walked out, she was just like both of us were kind of just like floating, walking out of the theater, because this is like very much my shit. Like this is, I mean, it is, you know, Lovers on the Run movies, like Wild at Heart and Natural Born Killers are my shit anyway. Monster movies are my shit. I like a movie that's audacious and loud and bold. And I like a movie that's a little bit messy. If it's, I would rather have a movie that's a little bit messy and a little bit unfocused, but that is bold and has something to say and has a point of view than a safe, quiet, cookie cutter Hollywood movie that's going to make $1 billion.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's, I bring up my wife because she like usually keeps it pretty cool on like her thoughts about or getting overly excited about a movie or something. But when the credits hit on this movie, she was just like, wow, I really, really like that movie. Like, I think that's my favorite thing I've seen all year. And I know we're early, but it just, it really, her excitement for it was infectious to me. That like, I'm just like, okay, all right, let me think more about this movie. Like it was, because I thought it was good, but then I think it's one of those, like the more I think about it, the more I'm like, okay, I really, really like that.
Yeah, so. I loved it. And honestly, like I already praised her, but Jesse Buckley is so good in this that like, if nothing else in the movie worked, I would have enjoyed watching it just for her performance, because I think she is electrifying on screen. No pun intended. But she is just really wonderful. And I had been wanting to see Hamnet because it's nominated for the Best Picture. And I've been trying to like watch all of those, even though I don't really give a shit about the Oscars. I still feel like I should try to watch the movies that are nominated, even though I haven't seen Anora, which won last year, but I'm doing pretty good this year. I've got like 2 more to watch, but that was one of them. I was kind of interested in, because I like Chloe Zhao's, I like Nomadland. I thought it was really good. And I'd been hearing so many good things about Buckley's performance. But then after seeing this and seeing how incredible she was in this, I was like, all right, next movie I'm watching, it's going to be Hamnet. And I did watch it. And she is just as good as she is here, but in a vastly different way. Like she is someone I am going to watch out for and like be she's between 2 movies that have come out just within a couple of months of each other, she's become an actress that I will get excited to see when she pops up in something. Like if I see a movie announced and she's announced as the star, that automatically increases my excitement for it. Like immediately she's become that person for me. She's so good.
That's good. Yeah, no, I think she's fantastic. Everybody in the movie is really good too. The supporting cast is really solid. So,
oh yeah.
Good job, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, for real. I mean, this is, I think, her second movie as a director.
She did The Lost Daughter, which also had Jesse Buckley.
I think that's why when she started to work on this movie, she immediately reached out to Jesse Buckley about this role because she had enjoyed working with her in that. There's a really fantastic article, interview with Maggie Gyllenhaal in the latest Fangoria magazine. So if you want to read a little bit more about it, it's in there. But yeah, it's unfortunate that a lot of people aren't liking this movie or that a lot of people aren't seeing it. But I really do think this is a movie where the people where it really resonates with them are going to fall in love with it and it become like a favorite movie. I think this movie is going to be a cult film. I think this is
I was about to ask that. Do you think it's going to be like a cult film?
I really do.
Classic maybe someday. Cause I was asking myself that on the way out. I was like, I wonder if this movie is going to catch on like that. It's weird to say about a movie. It's like $90 million to make or whatever. But I think a lot of that was because it was with Netflix originally, and then they would left Netflix and had to like reshoot some stuff or something. And I think it's been through a lot, so I think that that's part of the cost. But anyway, it still feels like, even if it's not getting the love now, I think as more people discover it, I feel like it should catch on.
I think so, and I think it will. I hope it will. I will definitely be singing its praises. So if my opinion counts for anything, go see this movie. Watch this movie. Maybe it, because it's the kind of movie I want to see more movies like this get made, you know? And it's not going to happen. Right. People always complain about everything's a fucking IP. Everything's a sequel. Like, go see the shit that's interesting, that's original. And yes, it's technically sort of based on an original, earlier film, but it is not a retelling of that story. It is inspired by that story. It is a completely original film, and that's what we need more of. And if we want to get more of that, and us movie fans are always complaining that we don't get enough of them, well, when something like this comes out, fucking go see it. Like, put down your $12, put down your $15, buy a popcorn, and sit in the movie theater and see it so more shit like this gets made. Otherwise, we're just going to have, you know, more fucking Minions movies. Nothing wrong with the Minions movies. I enjoy them, but
you're going to get a lot of Minions hate today.
I'm a Minion fan. Okay. But I'd rather have five more of the Brides than another Minions movie.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I love the MCU too. And I feel bad that I mentioned Avengers Doomsday and talking about this
target,
film.
Gary, it's an easy target. anyway, I think that's it for this one. If you're listening to this, thank you. If you just discovered Cinema Shock, go check out some of our older episodes where we do our full deep dives into filmmakers. We've got a new series starting pretty soon where we're going to be deep diving into one of our favorite directors that we've been wanting to do since the beginning of this show, pretty much. So that'll be starting pretty soon. So just subscribe and you'll get notifications when that hits. Or if you're a member of Cinema Shock Plus, remember that you're going to get to vote for our April one pretty soon. I don't have that poll up quite yet, but sometime here in the next couple of weeks, expect expect an email notification, or however you get your notifications from Fourth Wall, that we have a new poll up. And you know, if you're not a member of Cinema Shock Plus, go join for the lowest tier at like $3 a month. One of the perks is that you get to help us pick the next movie. So you'll potentially get to decide what we're talking about in April. Oh yeah, and follow us at cinema_shock and all that stuff. Gary, where can you be found on the internet for people who want to follow you personally?
At This Is Gary Horn.
And I'm at Justin_Bishop. That's it. Until next time.
May the wings of liberty never lose a feather.
And be excellent to each other.